This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. As we do every day, we've got a great show lined up for you. But before that, let me check with my esteemed colleagues and see how they're doing this morning. Lynn Mark, how are you feeling?
Pretty all right. It's a Wednesday, which means it's middle of the week. So, you know, we just got a couple of days left until the weekend.
Yes. And I also just realized I said, how you feeling? I'm not sure where that came from. Why did I drop the G? We speak the Queen's English here in Malaysia, right?
Yes, we try to. But anyway, Lynn, you just stole my statement about midday.
It's all right. Midweek. I think that's how we're all feeling.
Is that really all you two have to say so early in the morning?
Thursday, Junior.
As we greet Malaysia, as they wake up, make their morning coffee and head on to work.
We reflect the mood of every Malaysian
at
6 a.m.
I'm glad that we are imposing how we feel this morning everyone.
If you share our sentiments that it's already midweek, weekend that much closer, let us know. WhatsApp us at 01878988899 or even tweet us at BFM Radio.
I see that Lynn Mark is trying to galvanize the troops to make me feel like I'm wrong this morning. Maybe that's eroding a bit of my trust in you, Lynn. But that's actually, conveniently, it's a story we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But, you know, before we get there, we've got a whole bunch of stories we're going to be talking about during the 6 a.m. story, 6 a.m. hour. Noel, what are we talking about during the international segment here?
Right. So we're going to be, of course, talking about the coronavirus, something about Germany and also Myanmar. Things are getting more dire by the day, and something about the Israel election.
And of course, towards the end of the hour, we take a look at the local papers and portals. And Lynn, in about 10-15 minutes, we're going to talk about happiness. What are we addressing today?
Well, you know the saying, you know, money can't buy you love. Well, we're asking, can it buy you happiness?
Interesting. Can it, Lynn? Spoiler alert, can I?
Maybe. Depends on how you define happiness, lah.
And depends who's buying it for you.
So on the opposite of happiness, we've got the erosion of trust, which is something we're going to talk about right after this. There is a feeling that the remote working world and it has eroded trust amongst colleagues. Do you agree? Let us know what you think over on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us your own stories at 018-789-8899. And right now we're going into Well All Right by Blind Faith. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that funky song was Well All Right by Blind Faith. And according to the internet, they're a supergroup. So I was trying to figure out why. Why are they a supergroup? Because apparently it comprised of Eric Clapton, as well as Ginger Baker and Steve Winwood, who were all parts of different bands and quite famous in their own regards, right? And also Rick Grey? I'm not sure who that is, though. Maybe that has shown my age, maybe a bit too young to be talking about this band right here. But, you know.
Trust me, it doesn't matter about age.
And that's a beautiful segue into our current topic, Loma. We're talking about trust and whether remote working has eroded your trust in your colleagues during this time. Because the bad news of remote working is that you're not around your colleagues. And when in an environment where we're so used to seeing what they're up to, we're not, in the last 12 months, we haven't been able to see what they're up to. And for maybe many Malaysians or many people around the world, if you're not used to that, that could, and if you, let's say, a glass half empty kind of person, you might start thinking that your colleagues are being lazy instead of working at their full 150,000% productivity.
I was half of a mind to chime in with, you may think your colleagues are out to get you, but you know, we're not quite there yet.
Is that a PSA?
No, well, I mean, even if you're not naturally a glass half empty sort of person, pandemic and isolation, it wouldn't be surprising, really. I think a lot of us have experienced some form of pandemic fatigue, the erosion of our mental health during this time. So, you know, we might perhaps be more inclined to take things more negatively than we would if we were going to work as normal, right? And so this is actually, this conversation has its genesis in an interesting article in the BBC. It's worth a read.
It's Genesis, Lynn?
It's Genesis, yes. Early morning, big words. And what this article points out is that a lot of the times, seeds of trust are built very early on with your colleagues, right? And it can be things as small as sharing a hello in an elevator. It could be commiserating over, you know, a third colleague's bad jokes, you know, and these are the things that build that relationship without us really having to go out there and specifically dedicate ourselves to that. Without those little, you know, relationship building moments, we tend to be a little bit more distrustful, it seems.
Right, right. So what you're saying, Lynn, is that the genesis of trust in the workplace
is that going to stick around now?
Yes, forever. The genesis of this point will be this day today. But essentially, it is that when you are in the same space, or you're used to being in the same space with your colleague, that's where your relationship is built upon, right? But I know people who work in remote working companies that were based out of remote working, and because they're used to that, that's kind of like the status quo, right? So mm-hmm. trust is not built on the need to see people working; it's based on the output of their work. Noelle, when you read this article here, or do you have any general thoughts around this?
When we are not seeing each other like face to face and we are forced to communicate online, I think there may be that tendency or that feeling that you can't really trust yourself to completely convey all your emotions, right, online, because you might end up saying the wrong thing and that's not something you want to do. So what happens is that tensions go unresolved, and then that's when distrust build up, right? Because oftentimes when we're working in isolation, you know, we start to think about, you know, the worst thing possible, right, about your colleague. So I think that's one problem we face. And also there are some limitations in communicating online. Like for example, conveying negative feedback, conveying bad news, it's always best done verbally, right, rather mm-hmm. than and one-on-one, rather than, you know, telling the whole group and doing it and putting it in words, right? Because words can sort of jump out at you and they can come across very harsh, although that may not be the intention of the person writing those words.
Yeah, so I really do feel that this comes back to a few things, right? And you know, whether you're a glass half empty, glass half full, or there's no glass involved there, end of the day, it really does come to your perception of what you're going through, right? So if you read something and you perceive it to be negative because there are some other connotations involved there, then you're going to read that negatively. What I found helpful over the last year, and this is something I've learned personally from before on WhatsApp groups with friends and family, where messages get miscommunicated and go out of control and fights break out, and suddenly everyone, we're all just like, whoa, what happened there?
How do we get to this point?
And then you realize that people do read, people try to read messages in what they perceive will be your voice. So that's important to take note. So what I try to do is I just try to take a step back and be like, okay, what can I do with this? Because end of the day, I don't want to create a downward cycle of toxicity for myself in my mind, right? And mental health has become such an important topic over the last 12 months. It should be underestimated how much damage can be done when you don't, I guess, commiserate with other people and talk about these things.
Yeah, and I think Noelle made a good point there, because Noelle, you were talking about, you know, conveying feedback, right? So this typically feedback comes from a person in a slightly more senior position to someone who's a little bit more junior. And we've not really, you know, for most of us who work in, you know, typical working arrangements, not necessarily work from home or distantly all the time, we're not necessarily taught how to do that in a manner that would befit the current situation, right? So when a manager perhaps finds themselves feeling mistrustful of their teammates or the colleagues who work directly under them, that can also create a lot of stress, because then that conveys, then the sense of psychological safety is also no longer there for their colleagues. And it just breeds this, as you said, this cycle of toxicity.
Yes, but I think employees also will have to do their part. Mm-hmm. Staff mm-hmm. will, you know, have to communicate what they're doing, what they're achieving. You also have to, you know, convey a sense of reliability that you can be counted on even though you're working remotely. And I think this is a two-way conversation, so bosses need to maybe stop micromanaging every single outcome, you know, instead show some care and trust and, you know, just manage by exception rather than manage every single thing. So I think when we are starting to work offline, online in that sense, maybe there's a new social contract that needs to be negotiated between staff and bosses, maybe a new code of conduct, or, you know, bringing back the code of conduct. I think BFM used to have one, right, where you convey bad news verbally, not through writing.
The new social contract, that is a particularly interesting point, Noel. I think it's very important because, I mean, disruption has been happening from before and things are changing and the way we communicate is also changing. And a lot of us have been forced, maybe too fast, to adapt to new trends over the last year, maybe not suitable to everyone. So like I said, I've noticed with companies that already were used to it, they have certain protocols, they base it on output. But then again, not all not all productivity can be based on output, right? Some of it is based on processes. But hey, we're just three of us talking in a room here. Let us know what you think or what kind of stories you have about trust being eroded in the office, in the remote working environment, or whether you think trust has been eroded in this over the last 12 months. You can get in touch with us over on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Creedence Clearwater Revival with Green River. And I certainly wish that I hope that your happiness hasn't gone down the river over the last 12 months, because I think that's a feeling that has been felt by many. And oftentimes we're always told that, money can't buy happiness, but I haven't 100% felt that, right? Because there are times where I've personally felt that I've been able to buy a certain amount of happiness. And it's not with the things that you think it is. It's sometimes the small things that can make the biggest impact on how we feel and how we, I guess, our general happiness levels. And I'm just actually this caught my attention because I was reading Ringer Ringett's blog, and she had a review on how to buy happiness. And this was a book by Happy Money, by Elizabeth Dunn and Michael Norton. The book is called Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending. And these are apparently five science-backed principles to know about happiness. Lynn, why don't you take us through it?
So, I'm not sure about science-backed necessarily, but these core principles do make a lot of sense, right? The first one is buy experiences. The second one is make it a treat. Buy time, pay now, consume later, and as well as invest in others. So if we think about it, when you talk about money, retail therapy, for example, which is a very common way that people use to buy a little bit of happiness on a not so great day, that's making it a treat for yourself, right? A lot of the times it does, these kinds of habits do fall into one or the other of these principles. The question is, if you don't necessarily have a lot of money, and because Soraya Zainuddin talks about this through the lens of how she's always very money conscious, she also talks about ways to hit as many of these core principles at once, which is pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, Lynn, I'm a little unhappy because you doubted the scientific method that's involved here.
Well, I haven't read the book. When I read the book, it'll convince me.
But Lynn, the cover says The Science of Happier Spending. They're saying science in the... It has to be science-backed.
Covers are written to entice you to buy something. So when they say science-backed, they're trying to, give some sort of credibility to the book.
Yes. Yes. We all judge books by their cover, don't lie about that.
Yes, even though we've all heard different advice. But it's always important to take it with a pinch of salt, right? But I think and I like the way that Soraya Malaysianizes it as well, right? Because a lot of times, a lot of these books are written from a Western perspective, which may not translate to the cultures across the world. I particularly like her point on buying time, right? And this is juxtaposed against the story we talked about yesterday about
juxtaposed.
Yeah, that's my big word of the day, Lynn.
And you were teasing me about Genesis.
Oh, inspired by you. Entirely.
I've got social contract this morning.
Yes, okay. We've each got one big word today. And you can let us know which one you like the best over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. But the one I particularly like is the buying time, because yesterday we talked about financial independence, and the person in the subject of that article talked about how we spend too much time or too much money buying convenience. But it really comes down to what you value, right? And this buying time it was Noel Hughes who said this, that essentially time is not something you can buy back later on, right? But money you can make back later. Yes, you've lost some compounding there, but if that moment in time was very valuable, if you had missed it, you may regret it later on.
Yeah, so the core principle number one that is laid out here by experiences, I feel that, you know, I still buy things. They do spark a lot of joy, like, for example, handbags, although I haven't bought one for maybe the last 1 year plus. I think the thing is not to go overboard about your material purchases. But I think buying experiences is crucial. It gives you pleasure and is and maybe an investment of your future. Although I have to say, when I first kind of glanced through this article, my first thought was, do we need to buy happiness? Do we need to spend money, really?
Must pay.
Yeah, must pay, right? The typical Chinese-ness come out. And then this thing about buying time, right? It can be expensive, though. Like, you know, maybe we're trying to save time, so we, you know, maybe make certain kind of purchases. For example, doing household work, right? I mean, the alternative is to save time by just engaging someone to do housework, but that might cost me about 200 ringgit a month. So now what I do, I do my own housework and I just take it as exercise time. Yeah, so that's how I kind of, like, you know, manage that. But, you know, these are just like on the individual level what things we can do. But there's also something what governments can do to kind of create a more livable environment, you know, to create more social well-being for people.
Absolutely. And I think it's an interesting, I mean, we have world happiness indexes and that a lot of governments have adopted as well in order to try and raise kind of the happiness level of their citizens. But, you know, just coming back to this book as well, I think the example that was given here that Soraya helps to break down really struck me, right? Because it's an example of how you utilize these core principles. And ultimately, it does come down to your own value metric. But this is a good example. So say you invite someone who asks you for advice or support. You go to a neighborhood cafe. So that's number five, investing in others. You have a lovely chat. You improve your relationship. So that's number one, buying the experience. And you manage to fit in the meetup after you freed up some time by outsourcing chores, especially the ones that you hate. So that is number three, buying time. You pay for the coffee from a prepaid card, pay now, consume later. And hey, maybe you enjoy an extra special frappuccino or a big fancy or another fancy drink.
That's a multi-combo hit right there, straight out of a video game. Fantastic. But, you know, a lot of this are some really nice ways to think about happiness and how we can buy it, and not for top dollar, right? How we can, it really does come back to your own value metric and how you think about happiness. If you've read the book, I'd love to hear your own review of it. What did you think about it, and whether you'd recommend the three of us take a read of the entirety of it. And you can always get in touch with us on Twitter at BFM Radio, on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Let us know whether you think money can buy happiness. What is the best money you've spent in terms of your own happiness levels? We are more than happy to hear this. But right now, we're going into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And to take you there, we've got Lindsay Buckingham with Trouble. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Lynn Mark and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was The Strokes with Soma, a 2001 hit off their album Is This It? Right now, we're taking a look at what's happening around the world. And we're starting off in Germany. Lynn, what's happening over there?
So Germany's extended its lockdown now for 3 weeks, imposing an almost complete halt over this Easter holiday. And this is in response to the third wave of COVID-19 infections that have been recorded in the country. Chancellor Angela Merkel said that Germany's now in an, I quote, very serious situation. So restrictions will be even tougher from the 1st of April to the 5th of April, when most of the shops will be shut. Gatherings will be limited.
Yeah, simply because they have that third wave, right, which they announced, I think, a few days ago. And so this, I think they are really worried because it's more infectious and the infections last longer. And really, they are racing against time to vaccinate the population. So some of the restrictions that Germans will face, in-person religious services are cancelled. Big family gatherings are banned and all shops will be shut apart from food shops on Saturday, 3rd April. So, and of course, the churches are not happy about it. But I think given the current situation, you know, this measure is necessary because infection rate is now above 100 per 100,000 inhabitants in Germany. And a further 7,500 infections have been reported in the past 24 hours, as well as 250 people have died.
That's why it's always important to temper expectations, right? And just because the vaccine rollout is ongoing doesn't mean it's free and easy and do whatever you want, that sort of situation. It's, to use our other word we used this morning, social contract, right? There is a new sort of social contract right now, which is this whole Kita Jaga Kita situation. Let's not exacerbate a situation that doesn't need to be exacerbated. And if we take a look at the vaccine rollout, France's president, Emmanuel Macron, has said he wants vaccinations, and I quote here, morning, noon, and night. And this was he was responding to an increase in ICU cases and a rapid increase in hospital admissions. And if you take a look at doses per population, the UK has got about 45 doses of vaccine per 100 people. The US is about 37. The EU stands at 13, while Russia is at 6 and China at 5.
Yeah, so France is in a bit of a dire situation. They've just, I think last week, put the Île-de-France region, which includes the city of Paris, under another lockdown. Not as strict as in initial ones, but nevertheless, this was something that many observers hoped that they would not see. And of course, France also is the country in Europe with the highest number of cases per day between January and March of this year, January 2020, that is. The seven-day rolling average for France stands at 29,000 new cases every day.
Yes, and we think like below 2,000 cases is really quite an achievement for us. Denmark, very quickly. Cases in other European countries are rising. Denmark seems to be still moving along the timetable for further reopening, but they will proceed with caution, obviously. And some of the measures they are looking at is a corona pass. Which means that the holder has been vaccinated, you're carrying this evidence, and with this evidence, either in your handphone or on paper, you can then go to the hairdresser, a restaurant, or eventually a cinema. So I wonder whether this is the thing, this is what the future we are looking at, even for Malaysia.
The BBC has got a wonderful graphic here comparing all the different infection rate graphs or cases, case graphs here. And if I look at it, the UK is in contrast to what most of the other countries here. So the graph is showing upward ticks in most of the case numbers around Europe. The ones that are bucking the trend and going in the direction that we all want to see is the UK. They're on a downward trend here. So is Russia. Everyone else is still on that upward trend, which is this timeline here is from January 2020 to March 2021, 21st March 2021. And I think some are attributing this to the lockdowns that the UK has had in place and their large scale vaccinations as well. Now we're moving our attention over to Myanmar, which has been not the bearer of the best news whenever we take a look, right? Because it just goes from one dire piece of news to another one. And the one, unfortunately, we're covering today is that we're now learning about the youngest known victim in the crackdown, a 7-year-old girl who was shot dead by security forces in Myanmar. Lynn, what do we know so far about this story?
So family members say that the girl was killed at her home in the city of Mandalay. Myanmar, of course, has been gripped by protests since the start of February when we saw a military coup in the country. Rights groups like Save the Children have come out to say that more than 20 children are among the dozens of people who've been killed so far in the protests. This girl is unfortunately the youngest. According to the military, 164 people have so far been killed in protests, but other activist groups put the number at higher, at least 260.
And in case you're wondering why was the girl shot at home, it was because the soldiers had shot her father, and at that time the girl was sitting on his lap, and so I think there was a stray bullet that hit her, and so I think they tried to rush her to the hospital, but that could not save her life. Also, her brother, a 19-year-old boy, has also been arrested. Right now, the military is not available for comments.
Yeah, I think from an ASEAN response, it was only, I think Indonesia has asked for some kind of intervention here. At least Joko Widodo has made some kind of statement in that regard. But very quickly, while we're talking about international news, let's talk about Israel's elections. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's party, Likud party, is on track to win most seats in Israel's fourth election in 2 years, but may struggle to secure a majority coalition. This is something that the exit polls are suggesting. On that note, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, a look at the local papers and portals. If you have any thoughts at all, let us know over on Twitter at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with me, Roshan Kanesan, Lynn Mark, and Noel Lim. And that was the Indigo Girls with Closer to Fine, released back in 1989. And right now, we're taking a look at the local papers and portals. Lynn, Noel, what has caught your attention on the papers today?
Right, so the NST has a nice big picture on the front page on a night bazaar. It looks rather crowded. I'm wondering whether this is an old picture. But anyway, so I think there's been some debate here whether Ramadan bazaars should be allowed to be open. So, for example, basically the government's allowing them to open with SOPs in place. But there are some concerns expressed by the Masjid India Business Association, which represents a sizable number of brick and mortar establishments in the area in the Lorong Tuanku Abdul Rahman, which I understand is a very big bazaar area. It's like a landmark bazaar. And so they express a lot of concerns, and they say that it's a place for, it could be a COVID-19 cluster in the making. And so these are some concerns raised. But at the same time, so traders are a bit concerned too. How would the balloting work, right? Whether they'll be allowed to open a stall, and if this balloting is done too last minute, or they will only know the decision too last minute, it's very difficult for them to plan. Because what I understand, I think a lot of stalls do make a lot of income during the Ramadan period, right? It's their peak season. So it's very unfortunate if their livelihoods are affected or there's just too much uncertainty for them.
Lynn, what about the Star? What's on the front page there?
So the Star's front page, their headline here is GE15, no pact with PKR. So this is coming from, I know, a definitive end to all of that speculation. But is this really what will come to pass? Who really knows?
I think definitive is, you've got to put an asterisk every time you use that word now.
Yeah, because the overarching theme is really never say never when it comes to Malaysian politics.
It ain't over till it is.
So Dato' Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, who's the president of UMNO, has said that the party's got no plans to cooperate with PKR during GE15. Barisan Nasional is set to stand on its own in the next election, after, of course, also breaking up with Bersatu. So he's given multiple quotes. We won't work with PKR is one of them. So this is going to be very interesting. There's also a quote here on page 4. You should ask him, Anwar, who he had discussions with, but UMNO has not authorized any representatives to hold such talks.
So this is going to be very interesting because UMNO's AGM is scheduled for March 28th. And if my math is correct, that is this weekend. And a lot of things will be up in the air. And I think one of the hot debates there will be whether they continue working with the Perikatan National Government. Because as we've spoken to analysts, there is a faction within UMNO that, or at least reportedly so, that feels that they should continue working. And then there is, with the current government, there's a faction that says they should go out on their own during G15. So this weekend will be very interesting to watch, as well as how, if there are any power shakeups within UMNO as well out of the AGM. So that is something to keep in mind this weekend. Another thing that's caught my attention is that the new ambassador to the new U.S. ambassador to Malaysia, Brian McFeeters, is here, and he's basically reiterating the point that relations are good with Malaysia, and that on the economic front, 500 to 700 U.S. companies have invested in Malaysia, amounting to more than $10 billion of investments. It'll be interesting to see what he endeavors to focus on during his time as ambassador here. And if you want to learn more about what the previous ambassador and her thoughts on Malaysia, we had her on the Breakfast Grill in January 18th, and that podcast is titled Striving Towards a Perfect Union with Her Excellency Kamala Lakhdi, U.S. Ambassador, former U.S. Ambassador to Malaysia. Speaking of international, we've also got this news around, it looks like Singapore and Malaysia are trying to work out a reciprocal vaccine certification. And it's because so many Malaysians travel back and forth, right? And Singaporeans travel back and forth in Malaysia. That's going to be something that to watch out for. The details were supposed to come out next next month, and so far our foreign minister Dr. Hisham Udin has met up with his counterpart in Singapore, Vivian Balakrishnan, to kind of work this out. They issued a joint statement on this front, I think that's really all that's caught my attention. Lynn, is there anything else you'd like to highlight before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I think very quickly the NSD also, which I think is covered in all the main newspapers, is really about the Souk Highway accident. A gantry fell, right? And then it injured and killed some people. So the contractors have been ordered to stop work at the incident site except for rescue operations, which include efforts to stabilize the structure. Otherwise, you're going to cause another accident. And a temporary access plan should be provided for Puncak Banyan condominium residents who have been inconvenienced because they live around that area. And so I think they are now also looking to open an alternative road to enable the cleanup to be done in the location.
All right. And we're actually going to talk about this more in about half an hour, at about 20 minutes, with Mohammad Alizman Murshidi of the Malaysian Society for Occupational Safety and Health. Right now, we're going into a few messages and then the 7 News Bulletin to take you there someday by Sugar Ray. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.